Yeah, hi, Dr. Bill here.
Hi, Dr. Bill.
Okay. Hey.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning, I guess. Luckily, we were able to do it earlier, so it's not at 1 a.m. European time.
I do appreciate that. Thanks for making yourself available. We wanted to grab you quite quickly because things are moving so fast.
Let me do a quick introduction here. This is Carrie Cassidy and Bill Ryan from Project Camelot, and we are talking to Dr. Bill Deagle, and it is Tuesday, November 24th, 2009, and we are getting an update on the status of the virus in the Ukraine, hopefully, and maybe around the world. So, good morning, Dr. Bill, and maybe we can just start off with what it is that you have found out recently, I guess.
Well, there are two areas. First is the vaccine. It's all about the H1N1 flu. And there is some confusion. Some people think there's a difference between the Mexican flu and the Ukrainian flu, and there is probably genetic changes, but it's still H1N1. There's also confusion that they think there's another virus circulating, and there's no real proof of that. There also is new information about the vaccines and the adjuvants and which countries they're present in, and I've got new info on that too. The first thing is the Ukrainian virus, the gene changes that are reported, because they're not all reported yet, is in what's called the receptor binding domain, the RBD. And that's where the virus attaches to the cell to get in the inside the cell. And the receptor binding domain, the change is called the D225G. And that change means it attaches to the Ciella proteins deep in the lung, and it increases the risk that the virus will grow much more avidly deep in the lungs.
And that was also present in 1918, wasn't it, Dr. Bill?
Yeah, it was. And in fact, according to Dr. Henry Nyman and others, because some people say they don't want to just believe Nyman, these changes are happening parallel to the development of the 1918 plague after a Herald wave, after the designation by Dr. Gleason at the Baylor College of Medicine in Houston. And, of course, he proposed this about 30-some years ago. So the viral evolution is following exactly what we would expect. Now, the interesting thing is this D225 gene change is found in a number of countries now. There's at least 7 or 8 countries that we think it's present in, including the United States, in some areas. And there may be other gene changes that are happening as well. For example, the PB2 gene allows it to grow in higher temperatures, which means in deeper parts of the airway, i.e. the lungs, the alveoli, the virus will grow. So you have increased viral load. What's been happening since the spring, when the virus first was killing people, it would hit people with high risk factors, high body mass index, diabetes, previous lung disease, etc. And then during the summer and early fall, it's been killing more young people that have no risk factors that are getting what we call a cytokine storm, where they get enough immune reaction of their own body's immune cells. They dump these inflammatory molecules fighting the virus, and it's their own immune system that causes their death. What these two gene changes do is they make the virus grow deep in the lung, and they cause a cytokine storm that can literally dissolve the lung tissue.
This is exactly what you said in your 2006 Granada Forum lecture, and it's exactly what you said when we spoke to you back in April. So at the moment, you're right on the money, I'm afraid.
Well, the reason why I'm on the money is because I got the documents given to me by doctors and scientists in Zurich in March of 1997 that this was coming. And they told me there would be a binary virus, that they would release a pre-virus, which is the avian flu, and then they would later release a secondary virus that acts as a bridge. And that's what's happening. And the problem is people are impatient, especially in the Western cultures. This can take months or years to fully evolve to the highest levels, where it's causing maximum lethality before it peters or burns out. But they have to understand that the first thing is the first phase, which is the avian flu, was changed from its genetics in 1971, typed at the Edinburgh World Health Organization Type Culture Laboratory. And that genetic change included a change from a single polybasic amino acid on the H gene to 6 polybasic amino acids. And in the words of Dr. Nyman 3 years ago, that wouldn't occur in a billion years spontaneously. There were also changes on the NS1, the PB2 gene, and other gene changes, which were virtually identical to the 1918 flu. So in other words, they upgraded the avian flu, but the thing that they didn't have is there's 2 amino acids, major differences on the receptor binding domain that the avian flu doesn't have. So it didn't jump into humans easily unless you were growing chickens on your roof and they were interacting with birds, wild birds that would carry the virus and interact with, say, your chickens, say, in Indonesia. So there have been hundreds of people that died from avian flu. The latest real hotspot is near the U.S. Biological Weapons Facility in Cairo, where there's a number of young people that have died from it. But unless you have very close contact, it's unlikely. There's a natural firewall. Well, the problem is that this virus, the H1N1, as it starts to spread around the world and get embedded in the population, the risk of it interacting in either animals or humans, causing them to be mixing vessels to allow genes to jump. And I agree with Dr. Henry Nyman that the D225G change, which occurred pretty simultaneously in multiple countries, had to have a common gene donor. It's not a mutation that occurs simultaneously. It's like trying to win a lottery in a bunch of countries, all with the same numbers. It's not going to happen. So you had to have a common gene donor that's either a wild virus that's already out in the community that can interact and transfer that gene in a common host, an animal or a human, or it had to be sprayed on the population with the upgrade change, which is, I don't think, is that likely. Although it's not as hard. I mean, you could release it, but the most logical, what we call the Occam's razor, is that the virus is already out there with this D225G change, and the virus just recombined and transferred that genetic trait.
But Dr. Bill, have you heard, as we have, that the reports that 3 days prior to the severe outbreaks of this new variant in the Ukraine, that they were spraying, in fact, it was low-level planes, and it was sprayed as if crop testing.
Yeah, very possible. And what's interesting is we don't have the full gene sequences, because when the report came out in October, which I reported back in September because we had an advance of the time when it was published by Dr. Tumpe, called The Resurrection of the 1918 Flu, they can make subvirus clades. In other words, they can make a virus with just one gene change or two gene changes or a whole bunch of them. And they could have released the upgraded virus with plausible deniability and just sprayed it on the area. And that would be just as effective to spread the virus, because the virus will last for a number of days as an aerosol in the air, and it can infect people. So it's very possible they could have done that. It's very hard to prove at this point because there's enough possibilities. But what we do know is that the Western Ukraine is where this hot spot started to spread. It's spread into Poland now, Belarus, and Bulgaria. And we also have reports now of a pathologist in Polk County, Iowa, that reported hemorrhagic pneumonia as well. And in fact, I talked to, we had on the show yesterday, Tim Alexander, our geopolitical analyst that's on every week on the NutriMedical Report. And he talked to the Polk County medical examiner, who's a medical doctor, Dr. Gregory Schmunk. And he basically reported that all of the patients had hemorrhagic lungs tested negative for H1N1. Of course, you don't know, as Dr. Nyman says, you got to do PCR, and the PCR test takes 6 to 10 days, and if it's not done correctly, it won't show it. And the PCR up in the nose may not show the D225 gene change, whereas in the deep lungs it may. So you have to know where the specimen came from. So there's a lot of questions yet, but what we do know is that the virus is changing. We're starting to see the emergence of the second wave. Now, I believe the second wave was tweaked. How they tweaked it is probably as simple as the D225G change apparently is already present in the avian flu, which means the avian virus, which is out in the community that can't jump easily to humans, although there's a few cases here and there where a child, for example, in Germany 2 years ago, their cat ate a bird that was infected with H1N1, and of course the cat probably scratches or bites the child because it's a kitten, and then the child gets H5N1 and they die, the avian flu. It's very hard usually for the virus to jump because it doesn't have good binding to that receptor binding domain. But there are situations where animals can be a mixing vessel and the virus can then jump. So that's what I think happened, is that it acquired the gene from H5N1 or another similar virus. If they published the data of all the genetics, we would be able to determine very quickly if other circulating seasonal flus like H3N2 or others could be the sources of these gene changes, because they're not going to occur spontaneously. They're simply going to be swapped. So if those amino acid positions and those gene changes were not present in the wild viruses that are the seasonal flu, then they're extremely unlikely to be there unless they were sprayed. In other words, there's a way of proving it by exclusion. First, look at what are the circulating viruses in Western Ukraine, and do they have the genetic changes that would allow the upgrade to make this new H1N1. And my guess is that there are probably more than just the H1N1 D225 gene change. There's also probably some other changes to the PA gene, which is part of the trimer. There's three genes that regulate the reproduction of the virus, the PA, the PB1, and the PB2 genes. And because they're from different sources, and because they're obviously made in a lab, there's evidence they are a lab virus. It's recreated. It's replicating 2.5 times faster than any other virus and spreading faster by 2.5 times. It also has, it's like a fast photocopier, but it makes bad copies. So there's a possibility it can do that. But to have a D225G in multiple countries all within a couple of weeks of each other is impossible unless there's a common donor virus.
It's almost academic in a way, isn't it, Dr. Bill? Because what I believe I heard you say earlier is that the other scenario is that they just let all this stuff loose so that nature would take its course and you get to the same place.
Well, that's, I think, what they did. I think that my guess is Occam's razor is they already knew that the avian flu was there as a donor. It's inserted in all the continents except Antarctica. And it was only a matter of time before the virus would acquire these other lethal genes. And because it already does have all the receptor binding genes, the H1N1 swine flu, right? Then it's going to spread very quickly to humans, but it's now acquired some other new genes to upgrade the virus.
Yeah.
So it's like acquiring new software, if you want to call it, software upgrades.
So now we've got a nasty situation because we've got an extremely unpleasant and dangerous virus that's able to spread very, very quickly because there's such a huge viral mass out there. And the real question is, what happens next?
Well, I think the next thing is that, firstly, because it's like going to a casino and putting down 10 bets compared to putting down 10 billion bets. Now that there's so much virus out there, both donor viruses like H5N1 and other flu viruses, and this virus is spread to all continents. So it is truly a pandemic. And the pandemic definition is not a number of dead, but the number of countries and continents covered. And the reason for it is once you get enough viral load spread to enough continents, the chances of interacting with other viruses and acquiring new genetics that make it more lethal becomes a certainty. And that's what we're seeing now present. So in other words, when they did this, they had to release these biological weapons as binary weapons so that they would have plausible deniability that there's an evolution. And when we hear the storytelling of people like Dr. Henry Nyman, he lends information that's scientifically correct, but it tries to give you the support that this is a naturally evolving plague when it's nothing of the sort. He said to me privately that this was the H5N1 was simply evidence that there's been genetic tweaking or changes to the virus since 1971 to 1997 in Hong Kong. And I say, as Dr. Adrian Gibbs does, the developer of the Tamiflu and Relenza, University of Canberra, top virologist in Australia, that this is a lab virus. The lab virus now is acquiring new genes. The agenda, of course, is multiple. Number one, their buddies that make vaccines, there'll be a panic over vaccines next, that there isn't enough vaccine. I just got confirmation from a couple of different sources now that all of the adjuvanted vaccine in Canada, manufactured by GlaxoSmithKline, et cetera, all the vaccine has the adjuvants separate from the vaccine. So when the doctor, nurse, or technician, or farm tech mixes it, they take the vaccine and they take the adjuvants and they mix it in the same syringe and give it, which increases the risk of cross-contamination, infection, or missed dosage. Adjuvants have been proven, squalene, to cause ascending Guillain-Barré paralysis. And we are seeing cases in America which make me suspicious that some of the batches may have it pre-mixed in it, or that they're administering the vaccine with these aluminum and squalene adjuvants, because you don't see ascending Guillain-Barré paralysis with aluminum or with mercury, which cause neurological and gene damage. You do see it with squalene. So last week I talked to Dr. Sherry Tenpenny over the weekend, and she reviewed reports that apparently the FDA are being lobbied by the big manufacturers at these committees to actually release all this $700+ million worth of adjuvants to the pharmacies and farm techs and doctors and dentists that will be administering the vaccines to mix the adjuvant with the vaccine so they'll get an immune response so they only need one shot rather than two. We're going to have a massive explosion of autoimmune neurological disease and sterilization caused by these vaccines. They withdrew a large batch of vaccines. I think it's like something like 170,000 doses in Canada because the rate of anaphylaxis, which is sudden allergic reaction that's systemic that can kill you, was double the normal rate. in Canada. So they withdrew all these vaccines. That is because all the vaccines are adjuvanted. They're going to cause that. But even if they survive the cytokine storm and the anaphylactic reaction, the chances that they're going to develop a long-term neurological problem are extremely high. In other words, they'll get developed things like transverse myelitis, which is a spinal cord injury, peripheral neuropathy, brain damage, autoimmune disease, or cancer. So we're going to see an explosion of disease caused by the vaccine. So that's on the one hand. So the next thing I expect to see is a panic over, we want our shots, which are toxic, dangerous, and useless, as the trivalent vaccine, even released in research a few months ago. If you take the trivalent vaccine, the seasonal flu vaccine, you double the risk that you're going to get H1N1 because it suppresses your immune system. That's published literature. It's not my opinion. So we have that panic. And then when they realize the vaccine is not saving people, that there's still young people and other people dying, because we've calculated out the expected rate of death. And the usual flu is about 0.1% case fatality rate. It appears that this flu is around 0.6. So it's about 6 times more lethal than the regular flu, the one that we're calculating from Ukraine. And as of the 22nd, they had 1,608,603 ill, 95,361 hospitalized, 66,788 released from hospital, and they report 381 dead. But the report from Lancet published about 6 weeks ago suggests that of the those admitted with H1N1 flu confirmed by PCR in America, that 11% died. So I think their numbers are underreported.
Yeah. Let me just jump in there, Dr. Bill, because we heard indirectly from a doctor in Kiev. We put this on our site just about a couple of hours ago. I don't know if you've had a chance to have a look at it. It's interesting stuff. It completely corroborates everything that you're saying. But the issue with the numbers, as you will understand, is that this isn't all over yet. And
it's evolving.
Yeah. What we heard from this person indirectly was that 10% of the people who are affected recover within 2 or 3 days and discharge themselves, but the rest of them are still ill. If they haven't died, they're still ill after 3 weeks, and we don't know whether they're going to
recover. That's not normal. That's not a normal flu. The normal flu is gone in 7 to 10 days.
Absolutely right. That's right. They're still hanging on in there, and it's not known whether they're going to be statistics or not. And so we haven't finished adding up the numbers yet. And so that 0.6% could be much larger.
Yeah. The other thing that we're noticing, and this was found in Manitoba with the native peoples, is they had some gene changes up there too over the summer, is that in some individuals, the virus can continue to shed for months afterwards. And it appears that those that recover from this flu, because they get significant lung damage, if they've been athletic, they may have permanent lung damage, shortness of breath, and other problems. So even those that recover are going to get significant disability. What does this all mean? Okay, firstly, as I was told 12 and a half years ago, they want a plague for multiple reasons. They want an airborne plague because there is nothing that will force the vaccination chipping of the population like a plague. There is no other single thing or combination of things that will bring in literally the matrix system of chipping the population. Number two, it accomplishes, if you want to call it medical martial law, it accomplishes a system where they can bring in a World Health Department, which is called for a few months ago, by the G20. They called it for the setting up of a World Health Department. And I confirmed it with Daniel Estulin, who's in Spain, who's at the G20 meetings, including the latest one. So they want a World Health Department. They've been calling for this for over a year now. They want a system here in America with the Obamacare's health care, where they could have had a 2-page bill that would have done the following. Made sure your insurance was affordable, that a greater percentage of the money collected went back to actual health care, to doctors, hospitals, et cetera. It's only about 8%. Most of the money goes back for administration and coding. They could have made coding real simple. They just timestamp that you've seen the doctor. They don't have to have, you know, a lot of doctors can't even afford to have a coder anymore, so they don't have a private practice. So what we have is a system where they want to bring in an electronic medical record so that if you don't take all of the vaccines and if you don't take all of the toxic polypharmacy drugs, you won't get health care. And that's actually in the Obamacare bill. So we're not looking at a similar system that's similar to, say, a French system or a South Korean system or even a Canadian healthcare system. We have some degree of privacy. There'll be no privacy. Everything you do with the doctor goes into a central database. And the doctor will be disciplined if they don't force the drugs or vaccines down your throat as well. So when you combine this with an emerging pandemic that over the next, say, 3 months, 6 months, year, 2 years, the virus gets progressively more lethal in waves. At some point, whether it's, my guess is that if this wave is as lethal as I think it may be, we're looking at between now and March a high probability of some degree of martial law. Now, it may be just simple that international travel through airports is controlled or crossing the border, and that public things like stadiums, like football, and things like that may be restricted, or they may close some schools if there's a higher risk if that happens. But this may be amped up over time because their eventual objective is to chip the entire United States population in the first and second world, and they've got the chips and the virtual system already ready, as I presented 3 years ago at the Granada Forum. That's been ready and being built for decades. The database is there. It's almost like when you first went for your credit card and you went into the bank many years ago and they already had it embossed with your name on it. You say, gee, how could you have my name already on it even before you applied? It's because all of their customers already had a card ready. It's the same thing with the World ID. They're building databases with your Google hits and your credit cards and everything else, and they're linking all these databases together so that all they need basically is the final steps, which are universal health care and a universal database with General Electric supplying the Obama government. And they do the same thing with a supplier for software across Canada. They're almost completed with doing the same thing in Canada. That started a year ago. The UK and Europe, and they want what we call zone-wide licensing. So eventually their plan is to license people, say, for medical practice for North America, not just a certain province or state or an area in Mexico. All of this is very concerning because natural things and things that may actually save the population from a plague are going to be thrown out the window. So if there is forced quarantine, they'll actually increase the chances of cross-contamination. And the likelihood that if a contaminated area that's quarantined gets hit with a virus, most of the people will be infected.
Depends what they're really trying to do, doesn't it, Dr. Bill?
I think that they want to have a level of death, not necessarily the 30 to 60% lethality, but if they get 2 to 5% lethality with the virus as it's emerging in the next few months, it'll be sufficient to declare what I call a level one medical martial law, which means international travel. If you come in from a high travel zone area where it's just hot, you'll have to be quarantined for, say, 10 days with PCR tests. And anybody traveling across the border, like, say, from Mexico, trucking things in will be quarantined before they can release their materials. So it's going to have effect international travel and trade pretty quickly. And I think that it has the potential to crash the world economy, which is part of the agenda because they want to move to a whole new world economy with the special drawing right and the IMF being the new world bank and tying it to this noble new green agenda carbon tax, which, of course, is a scam that the CRU, the climate gate, proved that they were fudging their data over global warming. We're actually having global cooling, and we're heading into a probably 30 to 50 year minimum global cooling of sun activity. At the same time, we're at higher risk, as I mentioned in the previous talks, that the magnetic field is decreasing rapidly and going to put crops in great danger of crop failures, plus the climate shift, the volcanism of the under the oceans and all the other earth changes that are occurring. And they're speeding up. They're not slowing down.
So what you're really saying, Dr. Bill, is in the simplest possible terms, is it going to throw the whole world into a state of emergency financially and medically and then say, don't worry, we're in charge. We'll stick all the governments together, form an overarching world government, and everyone's going to be okay.
Yeah, exactly. And I think they want to accomplish this by next year. I don't think we're looking at 2012. I think that they want to have the culmination of the plague this winter or at the latest next fall to the level where they can have, and they do have de facto, in a sense, have a, with the World Health Organization, I asked some experts on this, how long it would take if they decided to go back from a level 6 pandemic to level 4, and they said several years. In other words, once it's declared, this treaty that was signed in 2006 by all these nations has put them all under the control of the World Health Organization, the United Nations, and they're going to, of course, their plan is to transfer this to a World Health Department. And, of course, they want to have a world environmental taxation. and the World Taxation Bureaucracy will then determine which industries. If they scan your home with a thermal scanner and it's got leaks, you'll be fine. Plus, you'll have to fix all the thermal leaks because, of course, your carbon footprint is affecting the world global climate. And it's all a lie. It's also, you know, they're not dealing with pollution. Like, they're invading countries with depleted uranium munitions, and they're, and a lot of countries are obviously not going to participate in this, such as India and China. They've already stated they're not going to reduce their carbon emissions, but America is racing into this, which will destroy our industry and our economy and the middle class. And that's part of the game. They have to destroy the United States in order to bring in a system where the nation state is a thing of the past. All this is trade zone.
Dr. Bill, but that's actually where, to some degree, there's actually hope.
I believe so. I think I'm not thinking of talking about this as a hopeless situation.
Yeah,
I think
ultimately, there are parts of the United States and militia movements and so on that are not going to go into the night quietly, so to speak.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, it's more than that. I get contacts all the time from rich and powerful people, military people, others that totally understand this. And I found out the other day from one of my sons, he said, you know, your Google video over at Granada Forum 3 years ago is one of the 5 or 6 most popular videos in the world now. I said, really? I didn't know that. And I said, well, maybe people are waking up. And what I believe is happening is what you're doing, of course, with the Project Camelot, and I'm trying to do every day, is we're, in a sense, trying to act as what I call like the receptors in the eye of mankind. We're trying to wake up the world to say, because we don't need a violent revolution. We just need a revelation of ideas, possibilities, and a transformation. And when that happens, we'll end the plague. We'll end the foolishness over suppressed technology for energy. We'll have free from war. We'll start literally beating our weapons of warfare into plowshares. And we'll get rid of nuclear weapons, scalar and biological weapons. We'll stop trying to destroy the ecosphere and start preparing for earth changes as a planet, as a collective of nations rather than as a world government. We don't need a world government as they perceive without nation states. Because if you don't have a nation state, you can't have private property. And if you have no private property, you have no personal autonomy. And the future has to have nation states or there will be no private property or autonomy. And so I feel very positive because I think that we could stop this plague pretty quickly and easily with hygiene and host defenses. All of the foolishness the government's doing is a totally wrong-headed policy. And the doctors and the people that I talk to every day, they see it, and they're not even conspiracy theorists, and they know that what the government's doing and what the policies are going on are completely wrong-headed. Everything they're doing is wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have to say that isn't there a chance here that people can actually get into a mental state, in essence, a meditation state, in which they begin to change their own bodies such that they aren't receptive to the incoming virus? Isn't it possible that given enough group enlightenment, so to speak, in places where they are targeting next, so to speak, with this virus, and even in Ukraine, if the people were able to have the presence of mind to do so, that simply beginning to use consciousness as the tool that it can be used for, it is possible that we can actually reverse this as well. Because if you think about the Ukraine situation, where people are about 10% of them walking out of the hospitals and having very little effect of the virus, what you've got is a group of people that have perhaps even a built-in immunity to this sort of thing, and such that they don't have a proclivity for accepting this kind of thing into their body.
Yeah, I think we have to do to attack it on multiple levels simultaneously. I agree with you. We have to attack it on what I call a conscious or a spirit level, which is I'm not going to allow this illness to get me, and literally assert that in an affirmative manner. We have to then be ready for inspiration on simple things. For example, one of the things that everybody should be doing is taking sufficient vitamin D3. If the average adult took 20 to 30,000 units of D3, they'd make themselves significantly more bulletproof from viruses because it blocks the virus from fusing with their cells.
There's an interesting story, Bill, if I could jump in there to completely support that. On our site, the doctor who sent this report in directly to us said that she was working in a hospital in Kiev. One of the surgeons, just 40 minutes after he got up, keeled over and died basically the next day. The other doctor also keeled over, but because he was a friend of this doctor who reported to us, she gave him intramuscular injections of 30,000 units of vitamin D twice a day and has kept him alive so far. And it seems to be making a lot of difference. And this doctor is a trained nutritionist. And this is just to underline the value of vitamin D. It's a natural antiviral, natural antibiotic. And, of course, this is one of the reasons why these waves roll through us all in the wintertime, because we're not getting the sunshine, and there are all kinds of other reasons why we don't get enough sun and we don't get enough absorption. So this is just to completely support what you're saying about vitamin D.
Yeah. Then the vitamin D also works with the probiotic bacteria in your gut, and they generate a whole series of antiviral antibacterials, your probiotic gut bacteria. So I think that this plague needs to be a nothing. It needs to be something where...
plague, you're talking in the lay sense of the word. You're not talking about pneumonic plague. There's a lot of confusion about this.
No, I'm talking about the
virus.
A virus that can spread quickly by airborne spread that can affect a number of individuals, both either mildly or seriously, and then over time becomes progressively more lethal. And the fact that these gene changes, the other gene changes showing up in Wales and Scotland, is Tamiflu resistance showing up pretty consistently, and also down in Mexico. So there's reports now of multiple countries where Tamiflu resistance is becoming pretty well embedded. So it means even if people thought certain drugs would help, we know that Ukraine has had the most open access to these antiviral drugs like Arbidol, which is a Russian drug that's been around for 30-plus years, and other drugs, but it really hasn't stopped it. The thing that would have stopped it is if everybody in Ukraine and Eastern Europe start taking vitamin D3, even small dosages every day, they'd basically make themselves bulletproof. And if every public place had boxes of masks, so if anybody started coughing, they simply put a mask on so they wouldn't spread the virus to someone else. Real simple measures. And, you know, the idea of waiting until this got out of control was criminal, as far as I'm concerned. I don't understand why, you know, if they really believe that these changes have occurred, how they haven't forced them to release all the genetics from Eastern Europe, and why the United States allows people to travel, say, to this country or to any other country without quarantining anybody coming from the hot spots where these more lethal flus are emerging.
Well, why is it not being reported in the media, Dr. Bill?
Well, actually,
I think they're waiting until
the New York Times has an article about the outbreak in the Ukraine, but what they're doing is they're actually kind of giving it a sort of a superficial once-over, and they are talking about the numbers of dying, which they say, in, you know, it was a couple of days old, but it says, 265 in the
Ukraine. Yeah, yeah, it's 381 as of the 22nd, which is 2 days ago.
Right.
That's the official number.
Major news. It's just a lot more superficial in the treatment of it.
Yeah, I think what they're doing actually is they wanted to reach the culmination where the more lethal version of the virus spreads to multiple countries, so the second wave will hit and then they'll make a notice of it. I think they're waiting until it hits, say, Chicago or Atlanta or LA, and then the virus is showing hot spots of a more lethal version that's emerging, and then they'll say, now it's an emergency. So they want a crisis.
Right. They want to create the martial law situation, especially in the U.S. I mean, I think they're probably, you know, it is probably just sitting there kind of like a sleeping agent in essence, because the U.S. population is not getting, you know, the same exposure to the European press and so on and so forth. And they know that.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the issue, I think, is you're right on the money. And, of course, this is tied in with the fact that all of this, of course, is tied all together. If people start to connect the dots, they want to reduce the world population. They want to control the population, because if you control money and you control the access and the travel of the people, you've got a matrix, and that's what they're trying to build. And they also, at some point, the virus will probably upgrade to even much more lethal than this, and at that point, you're going to start seeing the death of millions. And that could be years away. I think what they want as their near-term objective is a flu that'll probably be like the 1918 flu, about 2.5 to 5% case fatality rate, which would be around 5 times more lethal than the current flu that's in the Ukraine. And I think that's where it's going in the next 6 months to a year. It's probably going to acquire more genetics and get more lethal. And if it does, either in the near term, in the next few months, or under its current lethality, if it starts to hit America like it's hitting Ukraine. And the other thing that's interesting about this flu is you can get reinfected. There's reports, even Henry Nyman himself has had it reportedly twice. He had it in the spring and again in the fall. And when they got it, it's not going away quickly. It's like you say, these people are still sick in Ukraine after 3 weeks, which is not normal.
I have to say that maybe we're looking at a different scenario, though, in the next year or two with what might go on in terms of the war situation. Because actually, we know that there are factions, white hats, whatever you want to call them, as well as positive ETs and
stuff. Yeah.
That are working against these agendas, as you
said. Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And so what I'm curious is, you know, I do believe that they're not going to be successful. And I am curious to know what their rollout is going to be in terms of how does the war situation, because it's almost like they have a rolling target ball or whatever target for people to aim their attention on at any given moment. Meanwhile, they've got another completely seemingly unrelated development happening in which while everyone is sort of focused on, I don't know, the Ukraine and this virus and so on, they are developing, you know, they're setting up for, I don't know, attack on Iran or whatever it is.
I think you're right on the money. A lot of people think the Iran thing is kind of off the table, and I don't believe that is. I think they've delayed it. It could be delayed as much as 6 months or even up to 2 years. But they've got free flyover now of Saudi Arabia and of Turkey. That just happened a few months ago. So now what's happened is they've rebuilt these giant air bases now in South Georgia with Shakashvili. So although the Russians are in total control over the territory of South Ossetia near the Rokai Tunnel where all the pipelines come through from the Caspian Sea, the battle lines are being drawn up for World War III.
We understood from a whistleblower or a source, however you want to term
yeah.
it, that there was the establishment in Spain of, I guess, a U.S. base was being set up there in preparation for something.
Yeah, I think that Spain was, of course, a jumping off point across the Atlantic for World War One and for World War Two. So it wouldn't surprise me that they're doing that. The increase in troop deployments to Afghanistan, as the top experts have said, is going to increase the instability in Pakistan rather than decrease it, because the Karzai government are completely tied up and controlled by the warlords and the Pakistani ISI and corrupt elements in business that are actually managing the drug trade. So as they continue the attack in Afghanistan, occurs across into Pakistan, the risk that there'll be a breakup of Pakistan and an invasion by the United States is pretty likely in the next year or two. And if that happens, the likelihood during that expansion that the Israelis will do an attack on the Bashar reactor and infrastructure becomes very high. I'd say they probably delayed it, but it's not off the table at all. And I don't know when it'll happen, but there's no doubt that they don't want to leave Iran potentially a nuclear or a nuclear and biological state that can actually be a power broker.
Also, what about this situation with oil? Recently, one of our whistleblowers was communicating to me that one of the things they're doing with the peak oil scenario is that they have these reserves of oil that they're not touching, that they're using the old oil infrastructure and using up the oil, the old oil sources, because they're waiting for the earth changes to come and go. After which they will then use the rest of the oil that they're sort of not touching at the moment. As you know, Lindsay Williams has talked about a very big...
Yeah, well, there's lots of big oil sources. I mean, there's so much gas.
And then there is a... supposedly, he is telling me, that China is buying up huge coal reserves in Australia, which I guess has huge deposits, and I guess it's all over the world as well, and that once the earth changes come and go, the plan is then to gear everything up quickly using some kind of advanced form of coal refining or whatever you want to call it. I don't know anything about this kind of technology, but have you heard anything about, in other words, what is interesting to me about this scenario is that, because again, the powers that be are looking long term.
They have a 500-year plan or more.
Yeah, so they're looking, and they have these Cray computers. So they're planning, you know, scenarios like if they do this, what will happen there, and so they're doing all this kind of forethought in terms of their agendas. And I just wondered what you thought about the idea that they are actually planning for certain things after the Earth changes, come and go.
Oh, yeah. They've got plans, for example, to go to 1,000 years for terraforming Mars, Titan, and there's basically four other planetoids or moons they plan on terraforming in the next 1,000 years. So, yeah, you're right. Their plans are a lot of the technologies they won't release for gravitonic flight, for plasma energy distribution, because, for example, they've developed a thing called plasma energy distribution conduits that can carry high power without these high power lines losing their power as they go along the distribution network. All kinds of things that will be released in the future after, quote, the Earth changes occur and the population is reduced or under a total matrix control system, because they want to control the emerging future that happens. And they want to make sure the technologies don't get released prematurely, which is why they're suppressing energy technology. And they're lying to the public about what's really going on in terms of the planet with global warming. And in fact, they're seeding the upper atmospheres to heat up the Earth rather than cool it, because they know the sun is cooling down. So the geoengineering of the climate is the reverse of what they say. And,
okay. But how does CMEs that seem to be a big threat in the at least with solar cycle 24 or so we heard?
Well, yeah, there's an increased risk of solar mass ejections. But even if your magnetic field's down, you just have sunspots. You don't need to have a kill shot. Just a sunspot with very low magnetic field will cause the grid to disappear, and anything electronic like integrated circuits. If you're in the wrong place in the Earth when there's a sunspot and you're turned toward the sun, you could have just a sunspot itself could blast out electronics that are delicate on satellites. So you don't have to have a kill shot from solar mass ejection, although solar cycle 24 was already supposed to start gearing up, and it hasn't, which means there's a delay. And they think there's an increased risk that the solar peak of 24, even though it's delayed, will be greater than expected and probably greater than we've seen in probably 150-plus years. Which means that we're likely to get a solar mass ejection. And these quiet times often precede major solar storms and major sunspots, which we're starting to see, and a solar mass ejection as we head toward 2013. The report I have from my regular sources from power companies and from classified is that the grid isn't going to survive 2013. That's, I guess, the summary. In other words, unless we put what's called surge protectors, which Larry Joseph has said, found the same thing out from his sources, his book 2012. Unless we put surge protectors on all the grids across the world, the grid isn't going to survive not only 2013, but the move to green power, where people have solar generators on their roof and wind power generators, because they'll be putting surges on the line, and the grid won't be able to tolerate those surges without blowing the grid. As I say, there's a level of interventions already occurring on the planet to prevent a global cultural collapse. We've been given some, if you want to call it, leeway to see a response to the population.
I think that's actually a very good point. And, you know, I don't want to move too quickly by what you just said. I think there is evidence, and I myself have seen some of this, that we are having help. And this is something that Alex Collier was also referring to in terms of, he termed it mentoring by the positive ET races. I do think that there is a certain intervention happening.
I like to call them the midwives of the galaxy. What's happening is our world is being, if you want to call it, chaperoned into the next phase of civilization. Because we're basically a zero-order culture, and the transition is like going through the birth canal, it's a very dangerous time when there's likely to be a miscarriage or an accident. And that could be one precipitated by our own war or the lack of response to the public to things like, for example, if we don't just do something as simple as putting surge protectors on, or we scare people and say, look, there's going to be a giant tsunami, so you got to get away from the coast. Well, you can't move 90% of the world population 100 miles away from the coast. What we do have to realize is there will be changes in sea levels in certain parts of the world. Some areas will actually sink under the water, and other areas are going to rise up. There's going to be major changes in waterways, and they may occur not as quickly as we expect. They could occur gradually over a period of many years. You know, everybody's very impatient. The changes, I think, are going to start to a major extent in the next few years, but they've already started in 97 with the magnetic changes, and the major Earth changes could take many years or even decades or centuries for them to be completed. What we have to do is we have to start talking honestly about this, that our civilization has to stop doing more, We have to start treating the ecosystem differently and other life forms. We have to stop the idea of factory farming food that is toxic to our population. We can't have depleted uranium. We've got to start thinking about electropollution as epigenetically affecting us and other life forms. And we haven't considered any of these things in terms of our plan for the future. And then mankind is now reaching into the tree of life and able to change these genetics that, if you look at the dark side of what I call the dark empire, they would love to have a vicious, highly equipped, technologically advanced mankind to be a shock force to cause destruction across the cosmos.
And, yes, absolutely.
And I believe that that's a very grave danger. And in other words, since the Three Shards, which is the fall of the Atlantean Empire, where there wasn't an intervention, our world has been under conditional quarantine. And that conditional quarantine has kept us in certain bounds, technologically and otherwise, so that we wouldn't become a disease spreading across the cosmos, which we could, you know, with the change, with all the change in the root heart attitude of mankind corporately, we could be extremely dangerous.
Right. But that's actually one faction. I mean, the other side of that, sort of the alternate side of that, is that we could become hugely beneficial and
absolutely, because we
of not only the Earth but of future planets and so on. If
exactly, and in other words, we could become a great blessing, if you want to call it, because of the special characteristics and combinations of things that make up mankind that are very unique, even in the cosmos.
Right. And I think that again gets back to something that Bill and I talk about a lot, especially when we speak in conferences, which is, you know, the power of consciousness and the power of humanity that they don't want you to know that you have.
Right. In other words, if we deteriorate to think it's going to be selecting the right leader or a violent revolution, that's the solution. No, the solution is us. The solution is consciousness. The solution is attitude. The solution is seeing things like this movie, Food, Inc., and realizing you can't have factory farming, you can't have GMO food, you can't irradiate food and expect it to support normal life. And if you disconnect from the ecosystems, a disconnected mankind is a dangerous mankind.
Let me ask you something else, because, you know, I know we've gone down these roads before in some of our interviews with you, but I'm just curious, in terms of getting the word out, do you find that your own network is expanding?
It is, but not fast enough.
Okay.
A lot of the time, the message and the messengers are purposely confused by what I call people that have what I call ego issues or their own agenda, or there's infiltrators that are trying to, from the dark side, trying to confuse people. When the message is actually really pretty simple, like you said, it's not an issue of can we elect the right politician or can we get our civilian militia going. Yes, those things are there in the wings, but they're actually a sign of failure if we have to implement them. The real issue is if we get out enough message, then whether it's an airborne plague or financial disaster, all these things can be averted if we just come together and realize that we're facing this is a reality and not a hypothesis, right?
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Bill. It's been great to have you come on again and to get this update from you, because this is a
conference. I think people need to prepare now, because if they don't start getting ready, and if they want to contact me, by the way, I give you free advice to doctors and people around the world. They can go to my website, NutriMedical.com, NutriMedical.com, or Clay and Iron. They can call me at the 888-212-8871 line, and my email's on the site, too.
And by the way, I wanted to tell you, I've been talking to Waterman, Dr. Waterman. This is not his real name. But,
oh, yeah, I know. It's his pseudonym. Yeah.
And we should be getting an update from him tomorrow as well. He's been doing a lot of investigation. He wanted to say hello to you.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Have him give me a ring when you're talking to him next, because I want to get him back on the program, because he's got a very clear insight, and he realizes that this is not a game. We have to really start hustling here to get the truth out to the people, because once we get the numbers, the timeline is closing in terms of our opportunity. If
yes.
we don't get the numbers, we're going to face a lot of nasty destruction, and we may survive, but we're going to be like a cancer victim that's gone through full chemo and radiation, and we're trying to recover in a cachectic state with our body racked with therapies that we probably can avoid if we do the right things.
Right. So to avoid that future, I think it's advisable that the people listening to this spread the word. I do want to say that Project Camelot would encourage you to go out and talk to your friends and family and perhaps have them listen to this, as well as certainly other Camelot videos and other information that's out on the web, absolutely becoming plentiful in every way. So thank you very much, Dr. Bill Deagle, and Project Camelot thanks you for your service to humanity.
Well, I really appreciate everything you guys are doing. It's really remarkable, and it's a blessing to the planet, and you are appreciated. And as a witness for those that are watching, I want everybody to know that we are not alone in the universe, and there is a universe of caring and love out there besides the evil and dark side, and we are not left to destruction, but we need to start changing our hearts first before anything else is going to work.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, take care.
Thank you, Dr. Bill.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.